Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly, and now it's time for Eco Money, where we bring you the latest in sustainability and finance. 30% of firms in Europe are estimated to be carbon neutral by 2030, according to the latest analyst research by Fidelity International. The US isn't far behind, with a close to 10 percentage point increase in the number of analysts reporting an increased ESG focus at a majority of their companies. So where are firms here in Asia placed? And what does that mean for investors? Well, we're joined today by Jen Hui Tan, and he's a Global Head of Stewardship and Sustainable Investing for Fidelity International, to find out. Jen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
So Jen, let's set the scene here. The title of the latest analyst survey is Race is On to Achieve Net Zero. What exactly do we mean when we say net zero?
There's a lot of terms floating around: net zero, carbon neutral, carbon negative, climate positive. You know, what do all these things mean? So zooming in specifically on net zero, you know, what we mean by net zero is when we as a society achieve an overall balance between the emissions that we produce and the emissions that we take out of the atmosphere. So more specifically, we will achieve net zero emissions when any remaining human-caused greenhouse gas emissions are balanced out by the removal of those greenhouse gases from the atmosphere in a process known as carbon removal. And so really, if you look at the survey and you look at what the survey is telling you, I think it's unsurprising that Europe is leading the way. Or European companies are leading the way in this race to zero. They, as a society, reached their peak carbon emissions much earlier. They've been on this journey for a lot longer. They have a very supportive regulatory environment, you know, led by the European Union and the new EU Green Deal. And I'd say there's also, you know, a significant consciousness in the consumer and society in Europe around some of these issues. So just one example, back in 2019, our airlines analyst actually picked up this phenomenon that's now been called flight shaming. So what he noticed was that in Sweden, there's actually been a 3.4% year-on-year decline in passenger travel between October 2018 and August 2019, to which he attributed this pushback against people taking long-haul travel and, you know, seeking exotic holidays, and actually this growing consciousness and awareness of the impact of carbon emissions in society. Obviously, those numbers are not comparable today. There are not that many flights traveling.
I seem to remember hearing of that. And while you say, you know, in terms of government legislation, things are changing, things have been moving forward in Europe and Asia, we've seen that as well. I mean, Singapore has just launched their Green Plan 2030. So where are we at the moment in the region? And how do you see things shifting going forward on the back of such announcements from governments regionally?
I think that's a great point. I think actually one of the main things that came out from our survey is that there is this perception that Asia is very far behind Europe. Mm. And I think one of the conclusions that we drew comfort from in our survey is that Asia is behind, but really it's not that far behind. So if you look at the numbers, by 2030, our analysts expect that 24% of companies globally will have achieved net zero. And if you look at the geographic breakdown, it's 30% in Europe. And in Asia, it's on average 23% between China, Japan, and Asia Rex. And actually, our expectation is that these figures will continue to be revised higher in the coming years, led by things like these supportive regulations.
So where in the region is leading the race, and why at the moment, Jen?
By the end of last year, we saw the big three East Asian countries all announce these net zero ambitions: Japan, China, and South Korea. Mm-hmm. Globally, these three account for approximately a third of global carbon dioxide emissions. So I think that's a really significant step forward. Singapore herself announced an ambition to halve peak emissions by 2050 and to achieve net zero as soon as viable in the second half of this century. So I think, you know, there's this momentum that's really building up. within Asian countries and Asian corporates about the importance of this. And actually, if you look at the structure of carbon emissions, a lot of them are pointed towards Asia, because Asia is generally where a lot of the production and manufacturing happens for a lot of the world. So Asia clearly has a very crucial role to play in this fight against climate change on a global basis.
And you mentioned some of the key goals there, Jen. How realistic are these goals in terms of reaching net zero?
So, you know, as they say, the devil is always in the detail. And some of this detail we're still awaiting for. And incidentally, I should say that we're expecting more goals and more pledges to be announced as we get closer to COP26, which is a really important. It's in November, exactly right. That's a very important date, because it's 5 years from the Paris Agreement, and it's the official time when countries will look at their nationally determined contributions and reassess whether they are ambitious enough. And particularly this year, with the US rejoining the Paris Agreement and the announcement of the US NDC targets, I think that could be, you know, quite a significant thing as well for our global progress.
Taking a look, quick closer look at your report, Jen, it mentions that we could see corporate focus revert back to pre-pandemic priorities. Do you think this could be a step back for ESG targets? And are you concerned?
So I think that is a fair, I think that's a sort of a really interesting point to raise, because our survey did actually note that, you know, relative to a year ago, companies are prioritizing external stakeholders and employee welfare less, and they're prioritizing things like M&A a bit more. I think, you know, some of this is, I think it's important to distinguish between what is cyclical and what is structural. So as we come out, as we can see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of the pandemic, and as vaccines are deployed and as societies come out of lockdown globally, I think it's natural to see companies wanting to focus on, you know, their end consumer demand and how they're going to meet it, and sort of think about their corporate priorities in that context. But at the same time, you know, our view is that COVID has fundamentally reshaped the landscape for corporate priorities. It's really placed this idea of social purpose and corporate purpose really front and center in both the corporate world and in the investing world. And that, we think, isn't really going to go away. So we think this focus on stakeholder capitalism, this focus on sustainability and long-termism, we think all of these things are going to endure long past the pandemic. I think it's the one silver lining, if I can put it that way, of the pandemic.
What does all of this mean, Jen, for investors?
So I think investors need to continue to be on the ball here. I think we need to continue to engage with companies, and I think we need to continue to reinforce the point that this is something that we value and this is something that we want to see companies progress. I think it's our view that companies that can build stakeholder value in the short term, so in other words, companies that look after their employees, look after their communities, look after their suppliers, these are the companies that will create value in the long term for shareholders. So to me, this is good news for long-term investors like Fidelity.
Jen, how concerned are you about a future green swan event? And what does this mean for Fidelity and how you're working with clients? I mean, there has been a lot of discussion about the link between COVID-19 and the continued encroachment on natural areas. So what are your thoughts on a potential future green swan, and how are you looking forward to this and working with your clients surrounding this?
Yeah, so I'm very concerned about a green swan event. But actually, a green swan event is not low probability. In fact, it's probably the exact opposite. It's inevitable, right? If you have a once in a century hurricane event, and that happens three times in a single decade, you know, these extreme weather events are becoming a lot more commonplace now, and they're happening all around the world, wherever you see. And I think the mistake that we're still doing is viewing these as being isolated, you know, natural disasters, you know, one-off extremes, when actually the pattern is becoming very clear. And the pattern is very clearly climate change and global warming disrupting our weather system to such an extent that these green swan events are now occurring with pretty, you know, predictable regularity. So I think the question is really, and I should say that all of this is happening at a time when the planet has warmed by 1.1 degrees. So all of this is, you know, I think it's important to kind of think about that in the context of what we're trying to achieve with 1.5 degrees and 2 degrees and so on. You know, these events will have quite significant risks for the businesses that we're invested in, which is why we prioritize so much with our companies this focus on climate change, looking both at transition risk, how are they changing their businesses to reduce their carbon emissions, but also now increasingly adaptation. How are they making their assets more resilient in the face of all of these events going on around the world?
So lastly, Jen, what are you going to be looking out for in the year ahead? You've already mentioned COP26, but what are some of the key trends that you think are on the horizon when it comes to investing or sustainable investing?
The whole space has moved on so much in the last year and a half. And I think that pace of that pace of progress is only going to continue. In fact, I think we're, you know, if you think about ESG as a structural megatrend, I think we're only really at the beginning of that trend. I think, you know, we will continue to see a reshaping of finance and capitalism and private capital flows in the future. Some of the things that I'm, you know, optimistic about are around what we discussed earlier. So more granularity around the net zero ambitions from these large countries. How are we going to achieve it in practice? What does that mean in terms of carbon removal versus offsets versus allowances and so on? I think introduction of carbon prices is something to look forward to, because I think, you know, if you think about carbon emissions as being an externality, a cost that is imposed by the business emitting that carbon on society, then a carbon price is a way to internalize that externality and a way for investors like us to correctly price the cost of that carbon emission correctly in the value of those businesses. But on the other hand, I think there's a lot of technology and innovation to look forward to. You know, I think that the pace of that change is already very clear in sectors like transport, where you see that acceleration towards electric vehicles happening very quickly, likewise in battery storage. I think the next phase of technology innovation will focus on those hard to decarbonize sectors. So I'm thinking of sectors like steel or cement, you know, heavy industry, where a lot of the emissions are baked into the very structure of how those things are made, and innovation and technology solutions is going to be needed in order for us to find effective decarbonized solutions.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for sharing all of those insights and updates with us today.
Terrific. Thank you, Rachel.
We've been speaking with Jen Hui Tan, Global Head of Stewardship and Sustainable Investing for Fidelity International, right here on EcoMoney on Primetime on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.